Let's see. Let's get these good old questions ready.
Now, I don't know any of the questions, y'all. So for people listening, I don't know none of the questions. So this is all off the cuff. Just answering right. Organically, raw.
And for those that normally watch, they know I really don't come up with questions. I just listen and go with them, you know, go with the flow.
Okay.
But I think they didn't heard enough of this Croker music. let's go ahead and stop it real quick. But yeah, man, if you're just tuning in, man, my name is HD. I am the host of the Textual Talk podcast. I'm also an InfoSec professional. And we have another fellow brethren that's, you know, got experience. So you add that extra experience. I mean, he really got it. He's like, I don't know. He got a lot of titles, man. I can call him principal level, manager level, director, you name it. He's pretty much did all that. And without further ado, we're going to let Mr. Gabe, tell us about yourself and your background.
Absolutely. I don't know, man, where you want me to start? Because it's like a long, it's like a long version or a short version. It's a very long version, but it's one that's somewhere like the middle. Like, do you want me to kind of just go in or which one you want?
We want a soliloquy.
Okay. Let's see. Well, I was born. No, we're not going to start there. So kind of growing up in high school, I had a very strong love and attraction to mathematics, right? I actually went to like a math summer camp every single summer, like throughout high school and throughout middle school. So I had a really strong affinity towards like math, the logic, you know, because sometimes you get into like literature and other type of subjects and it's kind of can be up for interpretation. But for math, I knew that it came to an answer. It was like a focused and kind of a logical step-by-step on how I get to the answer. So my love for math and my desire to go into math, it kind of drew me into that of engineering. So my undergrad was in electrical engineering with a focus in on power systems analysis, which you can think of as like high voltage power. You can think of electrical substations, electrical lines, but also on the side of generation. So you can talk about like nuclear plants, oil and gas. So all the ways to generate electricity. So that was kind of like my focus in my undergrad. And then after undergrad, I transitioned into the automotive field. So I was in the automotive field for probably about a year and a half or so, where I worked for Ford Motor Company, a tier one supplier of Ford Motor Company, where I was what you call like a wire harness design engineer. And that's where I was doing a lot of utilizing software to make sure that what we designed in the software was what they were manufacturing in the vehicle. So I was working for that a little bit, but I found that there was a ceiling. There was a quick ceiling because I found the same thing I was doing was the same thing dudes 10 or 15 years my senior were doing. And I'm like, yo, this isn't any area, any room for growth, anything here. So I'm like, I still want to grow. I still want to learn because I was fresh out of college. So then I transitioned into that of nuclear engineering. So I want to take a pause there because I said a lot. So do you have any questions there or you want me to keep going?
You can keep going, man. I know the crowd's like, they're trying to see, like, how did you get to, you know, where you're at now? So I'm enjoying, I'm listening.
All right, cool. So, like I said, I transitioned into nuclear. So I was working at a nuclear plant as what you call like a nuclear INC or nuclear instrumentation and controls engineer. And just like kind of the title mentions, like, I was working at a nuclear plant. And it's pretty much, I was very much so responsible for like sensors and all types of digital devices within the nuclear plant, things to kind of monitor the nuclear process. Because really, at commercial nuclear plants, many electrical utilities have these. And what it does is that it just works to generate electricity. There's a process that happens where you're breaking atoms and breaking elements apart and the release. So that's called fission, right? So that fission process breaks elements apart, and that release or that breaking apart of atoms produces energy. And that energy, and I was in what you call like a boiling water reactor nuclear plant. It's composed by GE, and pretty much it boiled water. That water turned to high steam. That high steam was transmitted to some turbines. Those turbines spun, turned that steam energy into electromechanical energy. And pretty much eventually it wound up into an electrical lines that eventually went to people in their homes. So that's kind of what was happening there. But while I was there,
some Tony Stark vibes right now.
Yeah, you know, And it all started with math a lot of times, right? A lot of times math is underrated. I think that's the main thing. Math is underrated because it can kind of open you up to so many different career fields. But anyway, so while I was there at the plant, again, not too long out of college, less than two years, maybe a little over 2 years out of college. And we were bringing down all these different regulations from what you call the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which is a government body. And they were pretty much saying, y'all got to implement so many different cybersecurity standards, a cybersecurity program. And since I was the youngest guy around, I was newer, and it was all the computer stuff. They threw me on a lot of those type of projects. And that was my introduction into cybersecurity. It was within a nuclear plant. So at that point, I became what you call like a nuclear cybersecurity engineer. And I was on all types of projects, right, for when vendors would come in, what process would they have to go through in order to make sure that their machines were scanned before they touched plant devices. Also dealing with the plant network, different intrusion detection systems and things, and the different connections it would have between the nuclear plant and the corporate of the electrical utility I was working with. So all types of projects like that were going on. And that was my first introduction. That was my, I would say that's a career transition, right? From that of more purely engineering into more of that of a cybersecurity type of role. So yeah, man. I'll pause again.
Nah, I mean, honestly, when you talking, I'm like, shoot, should I change this to what is ICS security?
Man.
You know, because I mean, you really was getting into your bag on the turbines and fishing. I ain't seen mm-hmm. that since one of my science classes in high school. Really?
Yeah, man. Yeah. It's real. It's still happening today, right? There's still, well, nuclear plants aren't being built as much. I actually used to work for a company that used to build nuclear plants called Westinghouse. And they built these new, what you call AP-1000.
Oh, that's the same people that do the TVs? That's at Target?
Well, they used to do TVs, but they had another division, right? So you know how these companies are. They start to build up in one area, and then they start to branch into different markets. Right. Years later, they branch into, well, actually, they've been doing nuclear plants for some time. So they have what you call these AP-1000s, which is quote unquote like the next generation of nuclear plants. And they're building them in China. They're building them in parts of Europe. Of course, because France has such a strong nuclear type of energy portfolio. But yeah, man, it's still happening today. So you talk about your science class, it's still happening in the real world today, too. So yeah, man.
Got you, man. Mm-hmm. That's dope. So I had a question in there, but yeah. I'm going to, because it's kind of skipping because you didn't really say that part. So
okay,
how did you do the transition from ICS going into just like your regular standard, you know, mm-hmm. cybersecurity practices and what we typically do now?
Yeah. So I think that's a good question. What I did was that, so first I mistakenly, so they threw me into cybersecurity at that nuclear plant, but then I start seeing it growing. So they started giving me training. So I started getting like SANS training was actually my first training. So I did training for like the GSEC. And I eventually got the GSLC. It's like a security leadership type of certification in cybersecurity.
And they spent some bread.
Yeah, because they were really trying to build out that particular program. And they got me the GSLC one because they wanted me to be the next supervisor or manager for the cybersecurity plan, a program at that plant. But I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to do that because I was seeing how viable it was in the field. I'm like, cybersecurity is growing. And that's where I was kind of at the crossroads because I'm like, I done all this engineering, this calculus, this differential equation, this physics one, physics two, been studying and learning all this stuff. But then I'm getting all this cyber stuff and this is more emerging. You know, so mm-hmm. I was at a crossroads between, do I want to stay pure engineering or do I want to transition more over there into that cybersecurity? So I made the choice to eventually go more over into the cybersecurity realm. So I didn't stay at that plant, but I eventually hit the road because I didn't want to be a manager or supervisor yet. So I went on kind of like my contracting type of gigs. So I started going to different places, doing assessments of cybersecurity at different nuclear plants and other industrial environments. So that is kind of how I transitioned more fully into that of cybersecurity.
Nice. And I'm person that don't know anything as far as those assessments, because I know mm-hmm. like they have normal rules like security assessments where you just go assess the company's environment or something like that.
Right.
How, what's the word? How many, not jobs, but is that still like a thing as well? Like where like they're constantly like trying to hire for different assessors or to do assessments of like what you were doing in the past with those country gigs?
It's still a very viable field because, so like I was mentioning earlier, the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, they have cycles of them assessing. So the government comes out in the form of the NRC and assesses all these nuclear power plants, I think at the frequency of like every 2 years or 2.5 years. I could have that wrong, but they do regular intervals of assessing nuclear plants. And many times in a nuclear plant, when I was a nuclear INC engineer, you saw that, well, I told you that they had brought me into the cybersecurity stuff because typically those are less resourced type of roles. So they always bring in assessors for those nuclear plants in order to help them with their inspection or help them with some type of cybersecurity program or project. So those roles, those cybersecurity assessment roles are still out there specifically within nuclear plants. And they're paying. They pay good money, man. I think one that I saw, man, they had hit me up not too long ago to do an assessment on a nuclear plant. And I'm already in my new gig. So I'm like, nah, I'm not doing that because I'm not about to go contract. Write something that is temporary compared to something that I'm full time and all the way in. But I think the rate was somewhere around like $83 an hour. And they also cover like $150 per diem every single day. So that's like you get $150 for like your travel, food, expenses every single day combined with the $83 an hour rate. And they also give you some other things like relocation and all that for the time that the project is going. But again, that's temporary, but those roles are still out there to answer your question.
And that led me to a question that I'll probably ask later when it has to do with like actually like doing your own stuff on the side or whatever.
Yeah.
But that's dope, man. So what we're going to next is, you know, for those that just joined us, this is Gabe Bay of Struggle Security. Are you adding this up to his channel? Matter of fact, if you're a moderator in the chat, can you please go get the link to his channel and post it in the chat for me? If not, I'll go find it while he's talking.
Yeah, man. But, appreciate it. Thank you. I'm a newer guy on the block. I'm new on the cybersecurity YouTube block. So any support is heavily appreciated. So thank you for sure.
Yeah. But so what I'll go into this next question is because like I said, if I went to his LinkedIn, it'll probably take me about like 30 minutes to read all his job experience, like no lie. Like no cap. I went through that. I said, dang, he's been doing this about as almost as long as I've been out of undergrad. Mm-hmm. Well, really before then. When did you I think you probably said it and I forgot it, but if you were to probably say like how many years of experience in total do you have actually?
So I came out of undergrad in 2012. So it's coming up.
So right before me.
10th year. Yeah, man.
Yeah, I came out of undergrad in 2013.
Okay. Yeah.
So cool, dude. All right. So look, this is the next question right here. Oops, hang on. Mm-hmm. How is it being a cybersecurity consultant?
Yeah. Okay. So how do I answer that, man? So one, I like it. I like it a lot. One thing that I think that being a cybersecurity consultant does for you is that it allows you to see a lot of different environments, touch a lot of different technologies, and really try to, so kind of, let me take a step back. One thing that they teach us a lot in undergrad for electrical engineering or just engineering in general is that they teach us that, hey, you all are the, like they kind of big us up, like you all are the world's problem solvers. You build the bridges, you fix the systems, you do this, you create the technology. And I think that one thing I really like about cybersecurity consulting is that you really get to talk to the people who have the problems, the organizations and the customers who have the problems, and you get to use your subject matter expertise in order to solve those problems. You can get kind of creative in the way that you do it, and you can use industry best practices, but sometimes it's like brand new things that you have to develop solutions for, specifically in the area of cybersecurity. So that's one of the major things that I really like about consulting is that you're solving the problems of the people with the problems. So I like it a lot.
Yeah, I've heard like, I know one of my friends, when he left working with us, he went on to actually be a cybersecurity consultant.
Yeah.
And he was like, man, they just threw me in there to the wolves and I had to figure it out. But I think that's one of the best ways to learn, honestly, because it forces you to research. And that's one, I think too, like the same guy I'm talking about, my friend, shout out to Tavion. He made this TikTok the other day. It was like, you know, don't let like the job descriptions, all that stuff fool y'all. It's like, we Google just as much as anybody else. we just, okay. you know, we just good at it. And I have to agree. I mean, yeah. Other stuff you don't know. And I think it's like a misconception that you have to know everything to be an InfoSec. And I'm like, shoot, new stuff is changing every day. It's impossible to know everything.
That's true.
I think some companies don't really understand that because they don't have, I would say they don't maybe not have like the right type of people in their environment to kind of explain them like what you're asking for, you know, is not doable.
Yeah.
Or it's not even needed for this role.
Sometimes that is the answer to the question that we're given, is that I hear you, but you don't need that. You don't need that at all. So, you know, that sometimes is the answer that you give to customers as a cybersecurity consultant, is that that's not necessary. This will satisfy your requirement, or this will solve your problem rather than this big, huge, elaborate thing. So, you know, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I remember during my time at Optiv, like our principal guy would have to push back on the client a lot. Like, yeah, I know you want this, but for one, this is how long it's possibly going to take to even integrate this. And two, it doesn't make sense for your environment. So some companies got used to the companies just doing stuff just because they asked, but it didn't make sense. Mm-hmm. So therefore, they will have unrealistic expectations when they get a new provider. And like, nah, we're not doing that. One, you know, you always got to tell them, hey, well, let's see what the contract says. See if we, let's check our statement of work. See if we're providing that service to you guys. Not, you know, we can go renegotiate the rate.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like one of the first times that was when I did like a project in grad school where I first time had to create a statement of work. But the fact that I started being privy to those conversations, you know, made me aware of like how important the stuff that I learned actually translated to my actual career field. So
absolutely. That's another thing that people don't really think about a lot of times. They think cybersecurity is that cybersecurity is a business enabler, right? It's something that helps businesses be able to continue to do whatever the business does. So like those SOWs, like those statements of works, right? those statement of works, and even something that I do at my level as a cybersecurity manager is that I create statement of works for customers, or what you call like RFPs. Request for proposals or request for RFIs, request for information. And that kind of even broadens my capabilities and skill set because I'm dealing with financials, right? So there's times where I might have to manage resources for a program or a project for a customer where I'm looking at people and I'm like, okay, so to see how many hours you're putting towards that, I have to be able to anticipate how many more hours are left. And what that really looks like for the budget that is aligned with the style, right? Or there's times where customers might want something and it has to be priced out. It has to be said, hey, it's this many hours, it's this many weeks. This is what this type of services go for at an hourly rate. So, you know, I think that as a cybersecurity consultant, it also allows me to incorporate some or grow my skill set in the form of the business and the knowledge or financials of cybersecurity. So it increases my knowledge in that area. And I didn't learn any of that in undergrad, right? Engineering, none of that. I didn't learn none of that.
So. Like I said, I learned like a lot of things like in grad school as far as undergrad. You know, my motto was just C's, get degrees. I mean, that was just my motto.
Right.
Because I'm like, you know.
Yeah. Because a lot of that came in grad school for me too, right? So So where a lot of that stuff comes in. So,
But it sounds like you're
I
was gonna say it sounds like you're a consultant, a project manager, technical writer. Mm-hmm. really, I mean everything, you know.
Man,
a jack of all trades.
At times you gotta be, but you know, I think that there's other times where you really gotta focus in on one at a time. So you know, yeah. But it's fun overall, man. I'm just learning and growing. And a lot of times being one of the youngest guys in the room, I'm just soaking up, right? And I think that's something that people underestimate that, right? If you're like one of the youngest folk there, like you got to soak up so much game from people who have been there, right? Listen, I think a lot of times people try to go so fast and so forward, just try to get to the bag without realizing, you know, there's some requirements to be able to acquire that bag. So I think it's really important for people to jump in there. Yeah.
You definitely said something right there. Let me hit this one last time so people can hear it.
Man, these folks got their hitty shit. No
Look.
Yeah.
It's very important. And I've did this almost every, I haven't really been able to do it at this current role because the way its structure is. But well, this is more so for the viewers. Like I'm talking about when I started off, and I can go all the way back to when I first started help desk. I always glean like a lot of information from, I want to say the person, but one of the person I would say with one or two people I feel like the most knowledgeable of everything. I study them, take my notes down, and by the time I asked them enough questions where I had already did my due diligence, my level always goes up past everybody else because I'm learning from the best.
Yep.
And so at every job, most of the time I found like one of the smartest people that pretty much is a subject matter expert. And that always helps me. One, because if the two things. So this is what helped me in my last role. I was always looking at documentation. If I didn't have a question, I reached out to the principal guy who was like the everything for our client. And he left the company, ended up coming back. Okay. And they was thrilled to have him. But what happened was he saw me like, you know, he was always willing to help me, but that also put me in good favor with like everybody else because he would say, oh, well, you know, go talk to him. He knows how to do it, or he knows how to do this and that. And so that's another one of those things, like people always looking for mentors and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you have to actually show that, you know, you want to learn and you're coming in to work. So you can kind of prove that value. Because if you just try to just go, I mean, ain't nothing wrong with just coming and get your check and going home.
Yeah.
I understand. You know, I'm not at that age yet. That's how I felt about help. Because it's like it was people like 20, 25 years older than me. Like they was content with that, which is cool. I ain't knocking them.
That's fine for them.
Right. But not for me. No. But this is a game. I made a post the other day on LinkedIn. I was telling the young professionals like, hey, you know, you got to be able to learn stuff outside of work and keep on putting in the work, because if not, 10 years going to pass, you're going to be in the same type of role. Right. And you're probably not going to be able to get a different type of role just because of you haven't expanded your skill set. Your skill sets aren't current. They're only current with what you've been doing for so long, which Absolutely. You probably are well at.
Yeah.
But that's not going to get it with nobody else.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just a little nugget for everybody, because people are always wondering, like, you know, how do I upgrade? How do I, you know, become better at my positions? Like, you know, come in ready to work, find people that know what to do. Now, to the end, they're going to tell you, because the thing about security is like, now you may reach a company where somebody's just trying to want you to fail, but
yeah,
most of the times you're not going to run into that too much, because if you miss something, then potentially fall back on everybody else, and everybody might be getting a piece of paper saying, hey, you know, sorry, but we got to take up the contract or we got to let you go.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I've seen it happen.
Yeah. And that kind of brings up even another point with was thinking about another point as it concerns, you were saying like coming in there and soaking up and really understanding, learning from the best people. When you learn from the best people, I think one thing that it does is that it kind of exposes your own flaws or your own gaps in your knowledge. Right. So it's kind of like they're like, not to make them like God or anything, but they kind of like light. Right. But they're like they have a very strong light, and it kind of exposes you for all your flaws. And one thing that I did with a lot of that is that I was working with a contractor when I was there at the nuclear plant, and he had, I mean, way more years than me. So when I would hear him in meetings, he would be just spitting, like pretty much knowing the problem, knowing the solution, have done it before. And I'm like, yo, I don't have that. I don't have knowledge in this area, or I don't have knowledge in that area. And even when I was doing contracting, I was recognizing that, or doing the assessments at the plants, I recognized that I was having a lack in what you call like networking information, like computer networking or offensive security. So I'm hitting the Googles, right? I'm hitting Reddit. I'm hitting all these different places to try to understand, hey, where can I find this gap? Where can I find something to fill this gap in my knowledge? So then I had self-studied for CCNA, right? Routing and switching. I took like the ICND-1 and ICND-2. Nobody paid for it. Nobody told me to take it. But from those very good people, those very proficient people, the OGs in the game, I was able to see that was a gap that I had in my own knowledge. And then after I self-studied for CCNA, and I got that one, I self-studied for the CEH because I was seeing that that was something, another gap. I didn't have a lot of offensive cybersecurity understanding and knowledge. Like right. I said, at the plant, I was doing a lot of programs, implementing stuff, but I didn't really understand the attack vectors. I didn't understand how the bad guys were getting in. So I was self-studying, and eventually, and you know that video that you had reviewed of mine, the why I left my 150K cybersecurity job, right? Mm-hmm. I was able to get that job with self-studying and skilling up myself from understanding the knowledge gaps that I had. So, you know, to your point, you got to not only watch the best, but also some like make yourself the best. Make yourself right. the best and understand your gaps. So it's one thing that I did.
Right, man. Let me get to the chat real quick, man. Shout out to sure. my guy, Keep It Techie, for the super chat.
My man.
For the gems being dropped.
That's my guy, yeah, man.
Yeah, man. Josh is dope, man. Hey, if you want to learn yeah. Linux, go to Keep It Techie's channel. He got a Linux course. He just dropped some suggestions for books for you guys to check out for Linux. Mm-hmm. I need to do it because I'll be struggling with, hey, I need to use the cat command. Look, I'll be struggling because I'm used to GUI. But I do like using Linux in the terminal. I think it's super fast instead of having to click on everything. So absolutely. Shout out to him. We got Professor Black Ops in here. Shout out to him and Black Before Ops, the yeah. Billions.
Mm-hmm. The guys.
Right. Let me see who's this. Having my job pay for me to go to school for cybersecurity, hearing about consulting is motivating.
Absolutely.
Nice. Shout out to you, ERN. But let's get back into some of these questions. Mm-hmm. I think I probably answered some of them, or you answered them already.
I bet.
We'll do two things. We'll say, you know, I already kind of figured out, you know,
okay.
what type of consultant are you?
Yeah.
I'll let you go.
All right. I got this answer. So,
nah, you good.
So I'm what you call like a ICS or industrial control system / OT, operational technology, cybersecurity consulting manager. So that's a lot, right? ICS, OT, cybersecurity. Y'all have probably heard more and more about it over the years, right? As places like the Colonial Pipeline incident that happened, or you might think of what's happening currently over there during the Russian-Ukrainian war. Bad guys or hackers are finding ways to get into industrial environments, places that directly align with what I studied in my undergrad, like electrical utilities and substations mm-hmm. and nuclear plants and chemical plants and oil and gas organizations. So they're finding ways to get into these places to cause real world effects. So something that just came out last week, I don't know if you ever heard of something, the malware Indestroyer. It was conducted by an APT group called Sandworm, and they got into several Ukrainian utility organizations and was able to shut off the lights for Ukrainian customers for 30 to 45 minutes or so. Well, part two just came out last week, and they've seen evidences of Indestroyer 2 that just hit some other Ukrainian electrical utility facilities. So that's the type of cybersecurity that I focus in on in industrial environments, places like electrical utilities. So that's the right. type of consultant I am.
Do you have any, because I remember you mentioned some of the places you work for, and yeah. I know who you work for now. Mm-hmm. Did they get you a clearance, or did you already have one?
I did have clearances when I was with, I did. So during my undergrad, let's take another step back. During my undergrad, I did an engineering undergrad co-op with the Department of Defense. So I had a secret clearance when I was working in my during school. I've never been a government employee or anything. It was just a co-op. So it literally went from like my sophomore year all the way to I graduated, and they paid for school and everything. And they gave a clearance and they gave a paid internship. So it was a sweet deal during my undergrad. So that was my first time getting a secret clearance. And the second time I got it renewed when I was working as a network security architect for electrical utility organization. And I got the secret clearance renewed. And I think it just expired recently. And no, I'm sorry. I think I'm getting another one now because I'm working on some Department of Defense projects now with my organization. So yes, I have had clearances, typically just secret clearances, though. So, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I had to correct some stuff. I got some stuff in the works that the people watching are gonna like one day. No, yeah, you good. You good. Appreciate that. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think in 2 years mine will technically be like expired. Like right now, it's just not active. I have a secret. I got it in 2014. I think I have like two of them. They had got me like another type of secret right before I left.
Yeah.
Started my knock position. But you know, a lot of times they try to say, I'll say depending on what your job is, and if either in a contract or what you're doing, those clearances can get you paid. But I don't want everybody to think just because you get a clearance, you're finna get paid. Because I mean,
I think that has been something that a lot of people sell. Like I used to be a part of a lot of group meet groups. I don't know if you've been a part of those. But you know, a lot of people go from like active duty into retirement, and they have clearances, and a lot of people just sell that for some reason. I haven't necessarily seen the same thing. I've seen that, I guess, people with clearances, they're in less of a number, right? And that they can work.
Yeah, I mean, demand is higher.
Absolutely. They can work certain roles that non-clearance people can't work. Like, I think we compete a lot of times with individuals who are from different countries, right? So international people who come to America, we compete for a lot of those type of jobs. But those people with clearances that are working government roles, they're not competing with them, right? So because those individuals, international individuals, can't get clearances to work for those governments. So I could see some pluses and minuses there, but I think that above clearances, your skill set, your knowledge base, and your experience will get you paid faster than a clearance will.
Yeah, definitely. And the people that do transition out, most of the time they've networked to where they found them a great job, you know, on the outside. Not to mention, I know a lot of them, you know, shout out to all my military people, you know, that's getting that money with the retirement check. I mean, with the, what's the check? It's not retirement.
What is it?
It's when you hurt. I cannot think of the name. Disability.
Disability.
When you getting that 100% disability and you getting that good old check from your tech job.
Yeah.
So shout out to y'all.
You know, a lot of times they get in. That's like if they do the 4 years, right? I don't know all the standards. Let me not even start it. But yeah,
it's a lot of them. They get into it, man.
Yeah.
So speaking of that, you know, we're going to segue into money. And I know this is going to be, depending on market area, company, it's a whole bunch of stuff that goes into this. Like, you know, what does a typical entry level cybersecurity consultant salary look like? And then I guess to preface it, is the role actually an entry level role, or is it an entry level security role, which meaning that it wants somebody to have experience already, so technically it's not really entry level.
Right. So I think there are a couple of, and you mentioned a couple of them, right? You mentioned like location, organization. I'm gonna lean towards that of like the big four organizations, right? The big four consulting firms, because they probably employ the most cybersecurity professionals, even that from entry level, because many of those organizations bring entry level people straight out of college, right?
And come and those big four are for the viewers watching.
So those are Deloitte, PricewaterCooper, Ernst & Young, and
is it KPMG?
KPMG. So these organizations, so to kind of give just a little bit of background about these big four consulting firms, they primarily do financial services, but they also are very heavy in technology, and even more specifically, cybersecurity.
We work with them now.
Okay, boom, right? So they bring in a lot. So they acquire companies, they acquire organizations that are cybersecurity firms and organizations, and they pretty much provide services to organizations all across the world. So they have a worldwide type of market base. So when you're talking about an entry-level cybersecurity role, you might be coming into one of those big four organizations, those consulting firms, as like an associate consultant, an associate cybersecurity consultant. And typically, I would say these individuals, let's just say just on average, I would say the total compensation probably on average is somewhere between like probably 70 to 75 to probably about 80 or 85. So I say 70 to 85, right? Depending on the location, it could be higher or lower, but that's, or it can even be higher in some places like a New York. I know in different, more boutique cybersecurity consulting firms. I know some people who come straight out of college making six figures as associate consultants. So yeah, it all depends, but I would say you can probably start off somewhere around that 70 or so at the bottom.
Yeah. Cool. And what type of we'll do this then.
Yeah. What skills should someone learn? So, man, it's so difficult to. Okay, all right. Let me tell you why I'm having a difficult time answering this. Because not all cybersecurity consultants are created equal.
Correct.
I'm not saying it's like better or greater and less than, but it's more of like there's such a wide variety of consultants. And let me just break it down a little bit more. You have cybersecurity consultants who work as pen testers and red teamers only.
Right.
Like that's all they do. So they'll come into an environment, they'll set up shop, and they'll start to test for all the security vulnerabilities within systems. They're using Kali Linux, they're using Bloodhound, they're using Responder. They're kind of just moving around.
Hey, don't even mention Bloodhound.
No, you don't like Bloodhound?
We had a situation. Well, it wasn't my fault. I told them that they configured the rule wrong. Well, they didn't configure it wrong. It just wasn't effective for my team. But you can continue.
I love Bloodhound, man. And that's another thing that we'll get into specifically what I do. But do you have certain consultants that are able to just do red teaming and pen testing only offensive security services? But you have other consultants, right, that do incident response. So when a company gets hacked, they bring in these consultants in order to address what that problem is, to find where the compromise is, how far it's spread. They have even consultants who are reverse engineers. So they'll pull off samples of that malware, the hashes and everything, and they'll do analysis on that malware to find out who is the threat actor and different indicators of compromise. They'll pull all of that out. So you have consultants that do that, but you also have consultants that do audit work, right? They'll come into a bank and do cybersecurity audit. So that's very different than, so there's so many different flavors of cybersecurity consultants.
Because I think it's consultants that'll, a company might say, oh, we want to start a SOC. And they'll bring somebody in, you know, that startup stood up different SOCs for you. That's his job.
Hire
everybody need from platform engineers to analysts to pretty much everything, tool set.
Yep. It can be even very specific to a consultant that just configures firewall rules. You can have somebody that just do that, right? They might be brought in on a temporary contract, or they can be brought in to do like firewall configurations, and then they can work to kind of build out their skill set into other things. So that's why it's so difficult for me to answer the question of what skills do you need to have. It just depends on what type of consultant you want to be.
Right. So I guess I'll rephrase it and just make it like at a high level, because I also did a guy named Cyberspatial. He has like this super popular learning skills to get into cybersecurity.
Oh, yeah, the guy, he be talking with his hands a lot. Yeah. I do that a lot.
You know, if you think about starting a YouTube channel, this and talking with your hands and stuff is good, because we're a visual, our hands focus on this and we'll keep watching. So if you watch a lot of the big YouTubers, they do a lot of this. So that's how you get a lot of that watch time. Let me tell you where I got it from.
Because when I was in college, I was very involved with my church. They used to make me preach. So I would have to get up there and like move.
So you was waving your hand and preaching?
Lord. Yeah. Yeah. So that's where I got it from. I didn't get it from YouTube. YouTube got it from us. YouTube got it from the church.
And we'll get into a little bit of that later if it don't run too late. But go ahead. But no, I was really about to ask you, we hear consultants a lot talking about like the perks. Well, granted, a lot of people are not traveling anymore, but when they were traveling, how's that? I mean, we know you got a company car, but do you get to use those points on a company car for yourself? So tell us about that. Like, you know, tell us about the finesse of that. Like, how does that work?
Consultant life can be cool in that way, right? Just like you mentioned, you can get, like, they give everybody company cards. So you get a company card, typically, well, with my current organization, we get Amexes, right? Mm-hmm. And you just, so when you travel for customers, And just like I was mentioning with the financials, that is all embedded into that statement of work. Travel, expenses, all of that, food, all of that is incorporated into what we price that engagement out to be. So you just charge. So you literally, like, you can be gone for 2 weeks on a customer engagement. You can be going to their offices, configuring their firewalls.
What's going on, everyone? You're listening to Let's Talk Tech, and it's being brought to you by Anchor. If you hadn't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. They have a creation tool that allows you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or your computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you on sites like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
So doing the penetration test, staying at a hotel, you said Marriott, you said Hilton, it doesn't matter a lot of times. Also, it's dependent upon where you are and what we price that thing out to be. But you're literally just swiping. You swipe it. And you get those points, right? Because you tell Marriott, hey, put this under my awards card or awards points, or if you're traveling Delta, put these points add up to my personal Delta account. So you can get silver, you can get gold really quickly traveling as a consultant. So there's a lot of perks.
Man. I remember I had to go to the client wanted me to come to Burbank for like the quarterly, and one of my directors was there. We all was there. He had our company card. So of course, or either the client paid for us to eat dinner, we had fun with them, but then back at our hotel, shoot, that's one thing about my director, man. He works hard, but he liked the party. So I'm talking about he's buying the he's swiping for the expensive scotch. You know what I'm saying? We drinking that good stuff before bed. I was like, hey, you know what I'm saying?
Here's the thing, right? Sometimes you might have to travel for business development, because not only are you executing on customer engagements, but you also trying to sell services too.
Right.
So you might need to go meet somebody. And I know sometimes people charge for alcohol. Right, you can put your alcohol in the car.
Right,
so you know,
at certain times, I know when we went to Vegas for SplunkConf, like food was covered. It was like you just got to buy your own alcohol. I was like,
But and sometimes, was, like, man, I was traveling.
Actually, recently. Are you going this year to SplunkConf?
Man, I'm not. I like conferences a lot. I speak at them a lot too, but I typically do the virtual ones. Because I travel a lot. Well, I used to. So I do the virtual ones because I travel a lot for work. And travel might start picking up. And I don't want to add more travel to the travel I'm already doing.
I just want to go back because it was different. Like, it was fun. Yeah.
Really?
It was a fun conference because it's back in Vegas this year. Okay. The last time I went 3 years ago, it was in Vegas, and it was at the Venetian. This year is going to be in the MGM Grand. So people book now, like, or check. Hey, look, this is a hack. See if the company you work for is a partner with Splunk and you get benefits. Hey,
listen, there you go. They're going to hack right there.
Yeah.
I'm watching your podcast. You got that little, the hey, listen thing that somebody give a jewel.
I got to put it on there. Yeah. I got to put it back on there. I'll probably just do the snake.
But, good, man.
But if they're a partner, y'all can, I think we got like some free tickets there, but they'll have like your company probably cover like your flight and like where you stay, maybe your food, but it's a good experience for one. And one of the best things about conferences is that you get to network with people from different companies.
Absolutely.
And that helps you out a lot, especially in this job search. Like, I'm just going to get into it because I've reviewed his video. And so we'll just get into this part of it. It's like, you know, we'll talk about it because you were talking in the video. So I can ask you now. Who did you tell certain people you was going to quit that job, or like, who did you tell?
I didn't tell anybody until I got the offer letter.
Got you.
I didn't tell nobody.
Because even if you... Like I was saying, and when I reviewed it, I was like, if you are thinking about it, then it's only certain people you can tell that's going to say, I totally understand. Because if you tell normal people, they're going to be like, 150K, what you mean? You stupid.
Yep.
Not knowing if one company will pay you 150K, it's another one that will pay you 200, 250.
Right. Right. And that was the thing, right? Because I was even having conversations with my wife when I was interviewing, right? Because I'm like, you know, they're interviewing me. They want me to come on board. It's a remote role. And she's like, well, you know, we're pretty much good right now, right? We're pretty much set. Do you want to push it? Or do you think that this is something that's a good decision? I'm like, listen, I'm going after every opportunity that moves me closer to my goal. And she understood. Right. Especially after the new offer letter came in, you know, I reaffirmed. I'm like, all right, this is the new one. That was the old one. You understand? Yeah. Nah. Right. So, you know, that even builds the relationship. Right. Because she starts to trust you more about your decisions right. and all that. Because that was early right. on. Like when we had just got, we was barely a year in. So,
right. Yeah. And I felt you because, you know, that's what I'm going through now. No, I'm not going to quit. I got a family. Right. But you know, I'm interviewing and you know, the money, you know, is yeah. out there. Mm-hmm. For me, like right now, I only got certain people I talk to about like my career, and it's most people that's in my industry,
yes,
or people yes. that I coach or mentor. I do it to just let them know, just to be yep. transparent. Because when I was coming up, I didn't have anybody to kind of help me with these type of things or really understand the salary, how to negotiate or all that stuff. So I know it's very beneficial because, you know, mm-hmm. like I did that video about like, hey, don't lowball yourself. A lot of black yeah. people go into negotiation not knowing mm-hmm. what they're worth and end up negotiating absolutely. Lower than what they would have got paid. And yep.
I'm right there with you. So like you were mentioned, so I think I probably misunderstood your question. You said, who did I tell before I thought I was going to leave? I was telling people, same as you, right? People who are beyond me. Typically, I'm bad at taking a whole bunch of advice right. from people who haven't been there before. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
People give a lot of unsolicited advice who have never been in your shoes or beyond your shoes, if that makes sense. So I don't take advice from people who haven't done it. I take advice from people who have done it. I know that they've done it and they're beyond it. So I've called those beyond it people. I call those people who are OGs in the game and say, hey, this is the offer. This is the opportunity. This is the organization. What do you think? Right. And those are the people who I trust and I listen to when I'm making some of those decisions, of course, along with my family and my wife to really understand what effect it would have on them also. So
right. Definitely. Yeah. And like I know one of the big ones I look for now. I got two girls now. I'd be like,
yeah.
Hey, what the medical benefits looking like, man? Because yeah. insurance be expensive, man.
Yeah. Yes. That's another one. I got I don't know if I told everybody. Well, I don't know. It don't matter because I don't think my family is watching. they don't watch tech stuff. They don't watch none of that. But we actually got one on the way. Yeah, right now.
Nah, congrats, so, man. Congrats.
Yeah, man. Thanks, man. So I was looking at some of those benefits. I'm like, okay, what benefits is it for parents? I get 2 months off from work after every child. So just like you mentioned, those benefits for having a child, like
right.
like me, as the father, I get 2 months.
And I think so that's like, about all you're gonna need because I think about yeah. after 8 weeks, you're gonna be like, Because I found out like
being a gym. No, I'm just saying.
Right. No, our policy is like yeah. 5 months, but it's not okay. like you don't have to use it all at one time, but you got to use yeah. like 16 weeks a piece. I was like,
Is it per child or is it per child. Altogether?
So you get 5 months. So I'm like, man, I'm like,
it's that's a European like, standard. That's that European standard because they
really
let people off for like a year, especially mothers.
They did. I pushed yeah. for that. Like one of my last episodes, like women, right. it need to be universal. They need more time off. It's
absolutely, you know,
6 weeks is not enough to push somebody away from the child.
Absolutely. I didn't even tell Josh, keep it taking. I didn't even tell keep it taking. Hey, maybe, but thanks, man.
Josh like this. He like this in a chat.
Yeah. What?
That's my man. Like we talk on the back end. Like we talk on yeah. Facebook. We got each other's numbers and everything. I ain't even telling. Thanks, everybody. I'm seeing all the thanks and the congratulations. So I appreciate it for sure.
Yeah, man. But that's dope, man. I know. Like I think it's just one of those things. Like get the people who inspire you. That's there. They're mm-hmm. pushing it. Like. So I've been and he probably said this on Twitter, but like
yeah,
I'm back in the job search. You know, a little bit, and I'm seeing what's out there. I already know what's out there, Yeah. And I had just got more motivation. You know, one of my guys that I was telling you about earlier, who used to do consulting, he just got a crazy offer for Robinhood. Robinhood throwing the Brinks truck out at people. So it's like these financial companies and stuff like that, they're out there because their job, their goal is to make money. So if you can support them to keep on making money and not lose it, they're going to pay you. And that circles back to what we said at the beginning is like, you know, with InfoSec, like our job is to support the business.
Yeah, absolutely.
If we keep the business running, it's all good.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But
I think Robinhood is one of those remote first companies. I think like Twitter, Dropbox, I think Robinhood is in there too, where they're like remote first, where you see the FANGs and certain other organizations are like, we're hybrid or we're back to the office completely. So yeah, that's a good deal.
Crazy thing is,
I
just made it to like the second round for like a Dropbox interview.
Okay.
For like a security engineer.
Let's go.
Hey, it's hard because I was looking at what he said. But the thing about me, like I tell everybody, I'm honest. I'm honest with everybody
when
I'm interviewing. I'll let you know if I did do this or if I didn't. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, for me, I also interview just for experience, guys. Like if you keep interviewing sometimes, it just lets you know what company's looking for, what you need to work on.
Absolutely.
And that's another way how you can build your skill set. If you don't really know at work, just start seeing if you can get some interviews for some roles you may not meet all the, you know, specifics for. See how you do on it, you know?
Absolutely. I know, I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm. Right. I feel like it's like working out too. It's like, you know, the more you interview, the better you'll get.
That Dropbox interview probably got a coding section to it.
It does.
Because I interviewed with them maybe a couple of years back, several years, maybe about 3 years back, 2 or 3 years back. And they had a coding section. I'm like, and I was weak at coding. So I'm like, I didn't pass that part. So I just had to be real with myself. But I knew, right? That's knowing your weaknesses and whatnot. So
Yeah. That's what they say. And then also, because I talked to Robinhood too, and the recruiter was saying like they've been missing out on good candidates because they're trying to find people to code for what? Because I always ask them, say, is this actually needed or just something y'all want because it looks cool?
All the things are like that. All things, financial organizations, a lot of them, I don't know what, they want a lot of them want a software engineer with
cybersecurity.
With heavy cybersecurity experience. Well, that doesn't exist. That typically doesn't exist.
Right. And
you get one or the other typically.
Yeah, right. Because I mean, it's just so much. I don't think some of the people that do it, they don't understand that, you know, that's a lot to master because you've been doing one thing, because all that stuff is good. But the person who got the practical knowledge, who's used it before, they can catch up to speed. I mean, I had to pass a Python class. If I know it's going to be in Python. Am I going to probably do good at it? Probably not. It will be fun. It's like good YouTube content like it is right now.
And that's the thing, like you were asking, like, why, like, how practical is it? How often am I going to be using this, right? Rather than more using like Yara, like I'm writing Yara rules or tune in the sim. Like that's more, that makes more sense, right? You might get into some Sigma or some newer type of, or some newer type of things, but you're not about to be coding like crazy in most cybersecurity roles. And most people are not writing exploits either. So you talk about offensive security. Most people don't. Sometimes you got to write exploits I would say scripting at best. Right. Like mainly you have to script to do things faster and more efficient. But you're not sitting up here writing tools typically. But that's a whole nother thing.
Right. And I think one of the last ones before we got to the chat. One of the last questions I had for you was you know, what's a typical work day like for you? We'll go off like your busiest day. We'll say like, what's a busy day? Work day like for you?
Let me do this to say that every consultant looks different in every type of role. So I'm at a manager level at my firm, right? So typically for me, I'm setting my own schedule. I'm not really bound. Like I don't have like check-ins every day or something. I don't have to call my manager or talk to my, like, I don't have to do any of that. I'm pretty much setting my own schedule, setting my own priorities, and setting up my own calls and getting stuff done, right? Getting stuff done on my own time. So I would say probably the busiest day looks like probably me waking up, and talking. Oh, this happened the other day. So I was so I traveled for work because we were doing some work, like some internal training, some type of business development. And I had a call that morning with a colleague who was over in Israel. So they have different times, right? So they have different times. So I think I had to be up at like 7 a.m. So I had to wake up at probably 6:30, get on that call at 7 a.m.
Come on, talk
through some. It was cool though. Like it was so like at the beginning of the call, I was really like tired, but toward like as we were going more and more,
right,
talking about that development and really getting into some of the things, like this the cybersecurity things, I was like, yo, this is dope. This is gonna be a very good opportunity and something better for our customers. So I woke up as I was having that conversation. So that's that it was that. And then I woke up, got out of the hotel, you know, took my shower, brushed my teeth, and did all that stuff. Went downstairs. I typically would grab like a quick cup of coffee or some tea or something. And then I'm walking into the office, right? So because I'm on travel for work, I'm going into an office, which is pretty much ghost. Barely was anybody there. and through that day, I'm meeting with clients. I'm meeting with customers. We're talking about a way that we're going to do this engagement. I might be crafting some slides, or I might be explaining something technical. And I would have calls throughout the day with other projects that I'm on too. So a lot of stuff going on. So meetings, talking, doing strategy, and then lunch, we do some demonstrations. I was also teaching some stuff and doing some different exercises with incident response. And then later that evening, we went to Topgolf around 6 o'clock. And then I'm back in the hotel and I'm getting ready for the next day. So probably that's probably one of my busiest days most recently. And that was probably from 6:30 to a good 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. So
yeah, that reminds me of my busy days. Like the days I go into the office, I wake up about 5:30.
Yeah,
I try to be out of the house by between 6 and 6:30. That way, I'm missing the school traffic,
right?
And then it seems like, you know, we have like a lot of days I'm having like three meetings. Like I have one at 8 my time.
Yeah.
8:30, and then I might have like a 9:30 or something like that because they're heavy on meetings. I'm really, I don't want to get you up, but I really want to wear like this could have been an email shirt to some of these Zoom meetings because some of them too early. I'm like, just make a Teams meeting and we can get to it. But I know like it does seem like I will say it seems like you're a little busier sometimes in the office, but that's because sometimes people are bothering you will say. It's taking some getting used to because a lot going on. Everybody's having meetings and it's not like a lot of it's space, but not like a lot of space. So sometimes it sounds like you're on top of each other and it kind of gets like aggravating me sometimes. So
absolutely.
Like, this is
now I can give you a version of a technical busy day. You want that one?
I think they do because
So that was more of like that cybersecurity consultant manager busy day. But then there's also busy days where I'm doing like an incident response engagement. And that means that, so one thing that my organization sells are these incident response retainers, meaning that organizations will pay an upfront cost to say that if we get hit, if we get compromised, if we get hacked, we're calling you all to come in and to help us resolve our issue. So typically these happen on a Friday because I don't know what it is, but hackers hack on Friday. Like they
do everything less people.
Yeah.
It's probably Fridays, weekends, holidays.
Yes. So Friday. So this is a Friday. This is an early Friday because, you know, Russia or North Korea or China or somebody, they're on the opposite time. So it's typically very early on a Friday. And what happens is that somebody gets the inbound for whatever that incident is and for that customer. And that we start to staff it. We start to bring in professionals and people who can respond to this. And it typically starts off with something called like an initial like scoping call. So it's literally like fresh. So the customer is like, okay, we got hit. And these are the details. So I'm sitting there and everybody's sitting there taking notes, really writing down exactly what is happening, exactly what we understand. And then at that point, we start up something called a bridge. So it's an incident response bridge where people from the organization and people from our organization are on there. It's typically a virtual bridge. So it can be a Teams call, Zoom call, WebEx, or whatever. And then we're going through the details of what we need from them. So we start up a ledger talking, and this ledger keeps track of everything that we have noticed that has happened. We'll put in the notes from the call. We'll put in indicators of compromise. We have individuals watching the dark web who might have started to advertise that, hey, we hacked this organization, or we've done this. So we're watching all these different platforms, and then we're also working to address what their incident is. And as you know, with Sims, there's all types of agents that are in organizations. So we do some analysis on their architecture to try to understand how to get those forensic images and to be able to do some offline analysis to say, hey, where's the compromise? How far has the compromise spread? And how much has this affected the business of the organization? Right. And then we start to prioritize these things. So this is all happening in one day. Everything's happening on day one. So when I talk about a technically busy day, incident responses are pretty much the most time. And yeah, so go ahead.
I was going to say, not to mention legal is involved, because legal, you got to see what's going on. Like I know the breach one we dealt with is it was potential data exfiltration. So we had to get legal involved. Yep. What we could and couldn't say to people asking us about it that wasn't in the need to know group, like some of us were. Right. That was it was pretty fun, you know.
Yeah,
like I said, they would just listen to me. We would never had to go through that. But
it was what it was. I was gonna say it was just a wild time, and probably one of the most thought, like I can say it. I'm under no legal obligation not to say I was on it. But the largest incident response I was on was for the Colonial Pipeline incident. And literally that was being worked for weeks and weeks and weeks and months. And it was just so time consuming. Speaking of a busy day, I mean, every day was a busy day.
Hopefully they gave y'all a bonus for that.
Well, yeah, I think I got a bonus for it. I think so. Yeah.
Hey, y'all deserve like a
performance
it.
Bonus. So I think that probably did get included in that.
That stuff is like crazy. I remember I was working with a SOC one time, and they had this freaking, I forgot who got hit with ransomware, but they were like chickens with their head cut off on that meeting on that Monday morning. I was like, shh.
Yep.
I was just listening. I said, like, yeah, y'all didn't plan that y'all would ever get hit, did y'all?
Right.
And that's exactly what I drew from that. But that can turn into,
right?
No, go ahead.
People running around with their chicken, like chickens with their heads cut off. It's our job to
find the heads and put it back on.
I don't know, make them back into like, make them into Frankenstein, find the heads and surgically put them back on. Right. Got to jolt them with some electricity to get them back running. We have to calm the wave of the incident pretty much and be able to really contextualize and really understand what's happening in the organization, because they have other priorities. They're still trying to, typically the biggest thing that organizations are trying to do is trying to get back into positive business operations.
Right.
They don't have the resources, and even the capability. Right. Because there's even something that happens. You mentioned ransomware. This is something that people probably don't know. But while you're doing a ransomware investigation, if an organization does have like a large ransom, there's also organizations that do ransomware negotiations with the bad guys. So ransomware negotiations is something that also happens. They're talking to the bad guys. They're trying to get that ransom down or discuss what this looks like, trying to figure out if it's even valid. So, you know, it's just so many different pieces. Legal ransomware negotiations, for instance.
And the crazy thing is, that's an area people could niche down into. They could potentially be somebody who was a negotiator, like a detective or something, like a cop, and they can go into this type of negotiation where they got to worry about getting shot at.
Yes. Yeah. So it's a lot of things like so that, and I'm just mentioning one more, and I'm gonna get them more over to questions, because you know I go in on the subject matter. But another role within cybersecurity, people don't think about it, but like people can do physical penetration tests.
Right.
Like if you think about, like, these are people, a lot of times you got to be able to lie, right? People who can come into, so a lot of times organizations, I would say like large retail organizations or organizations that have a large like brick and mortar platform, they want to understand how bad guys can get physically into their sensitive and critical systems, right? Whether there's data centers or whether there's office buildings. So they will hire consulting firms to bring in physical pen testers to at times try to blend in with the crowd, try to find out if their security awareness training is actually working. That yearly CBT training that everybody does, they try to figure out if that works. They sometimes tailgate into buildings or tailgate into gates or even start asking questions, trying to act like there's some authority. And sometimes people just walk them right into the doors to their critical systems and their servers and boom, right? So yeah, that's another one that I think a lot of people don't think about.
It definitely is. And trust me, and we'll probably run this back. Like I said, next week I'll be moving and I'm getting a new setup. Everything can be set up. So we're gonna definitely be able to go in. Like I got a lot of people who I've had on the stream in the past that we can just have a live stream where everybody's just talking about their experience. We had a couple of questions in the chat.
Okay.
Here's one for David M. He said, how much contract work versus perm jobs have you had?
Okay.
Would you guys recommend contract to contract or locking down at a single spot?
Mm-hmm. So I think that I've had two. So I had one contract role that went for probably about a year and 10 months. And I had another contract role that went for 2 years and some change, like 2.5 years. And I think that the biggest advantage of contract work is that, one, the money. Right. You get paid more hourly. You just get more money in general than the permanent employees of organizations. And two, I would say the advantage of contracting is the experience. A lot of times are bringing contractors in because the internal resources don't have the capability to do whatever work that is. So I was mentioning earlier, like firewall configurations, they'll bring in a contractor to do specifically firewall configurations for, like, I don't know, 10, 15 buildings for that organization. So you're touching the technology, you're getting in there, where at times permanent roles, they don't come with that level of touching stuff, that level of just getting down to the nitty gritty. But permanent roles, a lot of times, they can be very good because they come with other benefits. Like we were mentioning earlier, that of things like paternal leave, right? Or a 401k matching or bonus programs or
bonus, sign on bonus.
Yeah, bonus, equity. Sign on bonus. Yeah. Yeah. And also organizations invest in you more. So not only are you coming to the organization
training.
I was just about to say that paid training. And I don't know, like you saw my LinkedIn, I got a lot of very high cost trainings. So I got like four, and I'm working on my fifth SANS certification. Each one of those costs maybe $6,000 to $8,000 a pop, and I haven't paid for any of it.
Respect on my name.
I've never.
You know what I mean? When y'all say my name, put some respect on it.
So I never got any of those as a contractor, but I got all those training opportunities as permanent employees because organizations invest in their permanent employees because they're looking at you for the long term. So those are just a couple of pluses and minuses. I'm sure that there's more. I don't know if you want to go in on that. But
you summed it up perfectly. I'll touch on this next question and I'll let you touch on it. Mercurian Lab says, I got the Sec Plus. What should I go for next? So I think you're asking the wrong question. It's not what should I go for next. It's what skills do I need to land a position that I want?
I was just about to say the thing you want to go for next is a job. Like,
right.
Just get in there. Just get in
right.
there.
Yeah. Because the certs, they can get you maybe a screening call, but that's not going to help you much in the interview. And reason being, from my experience being a coach, I have a lot of people I've coached that have these certs. I'm just going to speak on like most of my specialty, like doing SOC work. When I put questions in front of them that are like scenario based, they don't do as well. And that's because the cert teaches you to answer in an A, B, C, or D type of fashion.
Yeah.
It doesn't teach you how to think. So, and I will say it's a little bit hard to get experience, but they have these different type of platforms, TryHackMe, Hack the Box, Cyberary, CyberWarrior.com, Range Force, Let's Defend. There are a whole bunch of other ones, like Splunk has their like Boss of the Sock stuff. So it'll be things like that, that is training that's going to start programming you how to think, oh, what should I look for in a compromise? Or, you know, what should we be looking for? Like, hey, do we see any lateral movement? What does lateral movement look like on our network? How do I sit? What event codes should I be looking for? When you talk about Bloodhound earlier, Bloodhound, Sharphound.
Yep.
Like, them type of things come through a lot of labbing, projects, and training. So I would say look up the jobs that you want to land and then see what skills you need. Probably try to learn, like, three, four, or five of them. You don't have to have all of them early on, but just work on that, make some projects, start applying, and see who bites.
Absolutely. And it's that reverse engineering piece, looking at those roles, looking at the skills that's required for those roles, and being able to fill those gaps from there. So, yeah, I'm right there with you.
Yeah. And, yes, Mercurian Labs, I do one-on-ones. My info is in the description. Or you can, depending on where you're at in your search, I tell a lot of people, my ebook, that what I just said now is consistent with what I said in my ebook, reverse engineering. You know, we start from the goal, and then we work our way back to figure out how we need to get there. That's one of the best things to do. It is a lot of people, you know, telling you, oh, you know, I wrote blog, like my blog post on like Sec Plus not gonna get you six figures and all that kind of stuff. Like people always like that post, but it's because I just, you know, said something that's real about it. And we have all this is the new tech influencer culture where, you know, some people are tricking other people. Oh, go get all this, get my course.
Don't get me started.
And you'll get a job like super fast. Knowing like most of us know, like build your network up and you probably can get a job quicker than most. But you clearly can't make any guarantees with these things unless you have some type of, you know, relationship with these companies where you say
networking piece. No, I was gonna say, and that networking piece is so important, but I don't even think people talk about what networking looks like when you're inside of an organization. Like that's something that's really important, especially like a lot of times when you go for larger organizations. A lot of times people are like, let me network to try to find people outside of my organization who I can talk to or get with. People don't network internally a lot, right? They're not networking.
Listen.
Looking for different projects, looking for different roles, talking to the people that's doing what you want to do inside of your organization. That's such an untapped well of knowledge. Network internal to your organization. Yeah.
Man, that's why one of the first things I tell people when they come to me for consultations or whatever they're doing, maybe they're doing a lower level IT, something like that. I was like, hey, have you networked with anybody at work?
Yeah.
I was like, because that's one of the quicker ways to possibly get to your end goal than trying to start over from scratch. Because
absolutely,
good professionals are hard to come by.
Yep.
It is a shortage because, I mean, one, the barrier to entry is too high, but two, they just don't have a lot of people that know these things.
And every organization has a career page. Go to the organization you're working for, career page, cybersecurity or security, and go in there and apply. And a lot of times within organizations, they have internal application career sites that you can apply for where you'll have even greater consideration for those roles. And even having one-on-ones with your manager to let them know, hey, I want to get this skill. I want to grow in this area. I see that we have an opening. I want to be able to sign up for training. And boom, training requests in for stuff like that. So there's so many different internal networking opportunities that a lot of people don't take advantage of. They just want to leave.
Yeah, man. I'm one of the people that want to leave.
It depends.
But no, I was going to touch on the funny thing is we talk about networking. It's probably like last thing and then I'll wrap it up. In my book, I talk about the importance of networking and why like most jobs don't even get published, you know, externally. They fill them within from referrals or whatever. That's super important. You know, last Thursday, I was referred to this high level role from somebody in my network. We met through online. They've been on a podcast. I was job searching. I was reaching out about Indeed, talking about a position. I hit them up. Then she was telling me about another role they had opened up. That was like a higher level one than that. And she was like, send me the resume. Her director liked it. They sent me the rec before they even posted the job for me to apply last Thursday. So I'll keep, you know, Patreon people and everybody else maybe updated on that. But that's the whole thing. It's like the power of networking. Like I have somebody in your network, you get access to high paying roles before anybody else see them.
Absolutely.
Because people know your character and know what you're about.
Or even coming to the table with something for them. They might have a need. They might want somebody to write out a script to do something. I don't know. Just having like a sit down with somebody within your organization and understand what their concerns are, what their pain points are. And then being able to solve that, I think that puts you in very good graces with people where people will almost feel obligated to do something for you if you come to the table with something already. So
that's a fact, man.
Being just proactive about it. So
yeah man. But man, this has been a good live stream. Y'all, I promise y'all these live streams are going to get longer. To where we probably could set up like more questions and answers, or I got a lot of stuff in the works. But I appreciate Gabe for coming on tonight. This has been
anytime,
a very insightful video. And as y'all can see, he can talk, so he'll definitely be back. Or you'll see me on Struggle Security and we can run it back. Sure. You know, shout out to everybody in the chat, shout out to everybody that liked the video. If you like it, keep sharing. If you have questions, I have Gabe's YouTube channel on there. If you want me, do you want me to put your LinkedIn in the description too? If you want me to,
sure. Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna put Gabe's LinkedIn in the description as well. That way you connect with him on LinkedIn. If you have any questions about ICS or being a cybersecurity consultant, or you may be a person that's looking for a mentor. If you're worthy, you never know. He might say, "Come on."
But, I gotta start doing what you're doing, man, with the one on ones and stuff. I just don't got the time right now, but. Absolutely.
I mean, yes, I will tell you it is tough to scale it. I dialed back and with going back in the office, I kind of had to shift a lot of my hours and stuff like that. But it's we're gonna get some straightening on it, and it's gonna be all right.
Yeah.
But I rock with everybody, man. I appreciate everybody for tuning in. As a matter of fact, I'm shooting another episode this week. But until then, cool. Let's stay textual.